Warning, the following podcast may discuss topics of violence that may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, and welcome back to Above and Beyond. As always, I'm your host, Philip Kesterson. And before we get into tonight's episode, I would like to again announce that if you find yourself in Middle Tennessee or in the area of Middle Tennessee, this weekend, October 22nd through the 24th, is the Stones River reenactment in Lebanon, Tennessee. So if you want to see a Civil War reenactment in person, if you'd like to meet me in person, you can find yourself there, you'll find me there. It'd be a fun time. Come out, enjoy the show, and learn something, maybe. So, anyways, this is episode 7. This is going to be a split episode between two famous soldiers in history, and as I go along talking to them, you'll see why I put them together. The two soldiers are two Gurkhas by the name of Diprasad Poon and Lakhiman Gurung. And the reason I put them together is because their stories were kind of short, but there's a lot happening in them. So I thought that it's necessary that their stories needed to be told. Before I even get into talking about them, I'm going to start with the history of the Gurkhas. The Gurkhas are some of, if not the fiercest fighters in the world. The average height is about 5'3", but what they lack in height, they make up for in perseverance and bravery. Regular soldiers would kind of just look over them and not give them a second glance. But these guys, like I said, are extremely fierce. Their bravery and their ferocity is unmatched on battlefields. A majority of Gurkhas hail from the mountains regions of Nepal. Now, this region is cold and isolated from a lot of other people, so they relied heavily on themselves and each other for survival. Their ability to exert amazing survival skills is mainly the reason that they are such effective fighters. Now, their ferocity on a battlefield was first witnessed on a global scale by the British when they were trying to conquer India. It was at the Battle of Nalapani from October 31st to November 30th, 1814, when 5,000 British soldiers besieged a fort being held by around 600 Gurkhas. After the month-long siege, the British had suffered around 800 casualties out of their 5,000, while the Gurkhas suffered around 530 casualties out of their 600. So, obviously, the British were inflicting heavy casualties, but percentage-wise, the Gurkhas were inflicting around the same right back at them. The remaining 70 or so Gurkhas led a charge out of the fort and into the nearby hills where they were still able to maintain the fight and keep fighting. The battles that occurred after this and for the rest of the Anglo-Nepalese War had similar outcomes, where the British would heavily outnumber the Gurkhas, yet suffered heavy casualties. However, it was the fighting at the fort at Nalapani specifically that established the Gurkhas' reputation as exceptional soldiers. One British soldier who was at this siege said in one of his memoirs, quote, "I never saw more steadiness or bravery exhibited in my entire life. Run they would not, and of death they seemed to have no fear," end quote. This is a prominent theme with Gurkhas, that they just don't fear death, they always seem to be outnumbered. In every story that I've ever seen, of all the Victorian crosses given out during World War I and World War II, and like in Afghanistan, it just blows my mind that these Gurkhas continuously stare death in the eyes and tell him to get out of their face. So after the conclusion of the Anglo-Nepalese War, the Gurkhas would enlist in the British Army as their own separate regiment. They would go on to serve with the British as they conquered India. They would serve in the Second Afghan War during the 1870s. They were in the First and Second World Wars, and they continue to serve today. The thing about the Gurkhas is the British feared them, in a way. A lot of the people who go up against the Gurkhas, they do fear them. In World War II, the Japanese feared them a lot. There's this idea that the Allies feared the Japanese to an extent. Like the Americans, the Chinese, the British, they feared the Japanese because, at least in their eyes, they were barbaric. The way that they handled prisoners, the way that they fought, the fact that they would fight to the death, that they would hide in these holes and attack people, it was barbaric. But the Japanese were scared of Gurkhas. So what does that say about the Gurkhas? there were sometimes I've read some stories that Gurkhas during World War II, they would be told to stay in their camps, like while they were stationed somewhere in the South Pacific. And what some of them would do was they would sneak out of their camps at night and purposely go looking for Japanese sentries. And sometimes they wouldn't even like kill them or anything. They would like take their shoes, or they would tie their shoes together, or they would take like their pillows or stuff. Like they would just mess with them. Like the mind games that the Gurkhas did against their enemies was ridiculous. But of all the places that the Gurkhas have served in their 200 or so years in the British Army, the two places we're going to be focusing on tonight's episode is World War II and Afghanistan, with Lakhaman Garung serving in World War II and Diprasad Poon serving in Afghanistan. Now, these two incidences are almost identical, even though they take place 55 years apart. Like, the way that they happen and what these two men did, they're pretty similar, and it's crazy, so we're going to get into it. We're going to start with Lakhaman Garung. Now, by mid-1944, the Japanese army was slowly being pushed back into Japan. Following their crushing defeat at the Battle of Midway in 1942, the Japanese, upon losing most of their navy, they were forced to go on the defensive for most of the rest of the war. Now, the Allies began island hopping and taking back territories that had, and they had relatively well success with this. There was very few snags that they hit. For the most part, they were doing pretty good at pushing the Japanese back into Japan. One of the most important campaigns of the Pacific Theater was the Burma campaign. And this was because this campaign almost took place throughout the entirety of World War II. Burma, the geographic location of it is one of the reasons that this campaign went on as long as it did. It had horrible terrain and the weather, it was... They experienced a lot of monsoons, so there were only a few months out of the year where the Allies, or even the Japanese in this case, were able to move anywhere at all. And because it was hard to move troops and supplies due to the frequent rain and the terrain, the Allies had to rely heavily on air support to move troops, get in supplies, and things like that. Another big issue that the Allies faced was there was very little cooperation between the Allies, specifically between the British, American, and Chinese forces, as they all had different plans for attacking into, aiming towards mainland Japan. This allowed the Japanese to capitalize and conquer the region in 1942. And in 1944 and in 1945, the Allies were slowly starting to retake the area. So this is where Lakhaman Garung comes into play. He was born on December 30th, 1917, and he was raised for most of his life in a village of Dahakani in the Chitwan district of Nepal. He was allowed to join the British Army in 1940, despite not reaching the height requirement. He was only about 4'11 at the time. And I believe that the British requirement at this time was around 5'5", 5'6". But like I said at the top of the show, Gurkha's average height was around 5'3". So he was 4'11". So now he is less than the exception that the British Army made to accept these troops in. Nevertheless, he was signed into service with the 89th Indian Infantry Brigade of the 7th Indian Infantry Division, 4th Battalion, 8th Gurkha Rifles. Now in May of 1945, his unit was ordered to attack the Japanese forces across the Irrawaddy River in Burma. And on May 12th, 1945, his men reached their position and they set up camp. The men were resting in the jungle that night, and he, along with two other men, so keep in mind, there's only three men at this time, him and two other men were stationed as sentries a little bit ahead of the camp in a trench, and their job was to alert the others if the Japanese attacked. Now, on the morning of May 13th, sometime after midnight, it's around 1 or 2 a.m., a force of at least 200 Japanese soldiers decided that they were going to launch a surprise attack on these Gurkhas. Because, like I said, the Japanese, they were scared of the Gurkhas, so they thought the best way to catch them was to catch them off guard while they were sleeping. So now, these 200 Japanese soldiers are moving through the jungle, heading directly for these Gurkhas who are asleep and resting. There's only one thing standing in the way. It is Lakhaman Garung and these two men in this trench. But before we get into this, I'm going to pause here for a word from our sponsor. So now the Japanese soldiers have realized that there are sentries. They don't know how many, but they know that there is somebody in their way. So what they begin to do is start chucking grenades at Garung and his two men. The first one lands directly in front of Garum. He grabs it, throws it back. And then another grenade comes and lands directly in front of him. Again, he grabs this and throws it back before it goes off. And then they throw one more grenade. It hits in front of him, and as he reaches out to grab it, it explodes. Now what it does is it completely blew off all the fingers on his right hand. It shattered his right hand. It sent hot shrapnel into his face, completely blinding his right eye, into his entire body, and into his right leg. What this grenade also does is completely incapacitate the two men that are in this trench with him. So now, Lakamangarung is not holding this trench against 200 Japanese soldiers with two other men. He is holding this trench with 200 Japanese soldiers all by himself. This grenade blast alone would be enough to send anybody to the ground. Anybody but our boy here, Guru. Because what he does next is pulls his signature Gurkha Kukri out. He stabs it into the ground in front of him and yells, quote, "Not a single one of you will pass this blade," end quote. That is probably one of the most badass things I've ever heard anybody say. Just the fact that he got messed up pretty bad. He had this grenade completely render his right hand useless. It blew off his fingers. It blinded him in his right eye. And he's sitting here, and he sees these guys coming, and he thinks to himself, not today. I think I'm going to make them work for it. This is the Gurkha way. And I've said it twice by now, but I want you to keep in mind, his right hand is missing all of the fingers. His right hand is completely shattered. He cannot see out of his right eye. He cannot stand on his right leg. Keep all of that in mind, because for the next 4 hours, Lakamangarung is reloading his rifle with just his left hand. This is a bolt-action rifle, by the way. And I don't know if you've ever seen a bolt-action rifle, but 99% of them are made for right-handed people. So he is loading this thing left-handed, and he is firing and firing and firing, and he is dropping Japanese soldier after Japanese soldier. And the entire time, he's reportedly screaming, quote, "Come and fight a Gurkha," end quote. So he is taunting these Japanese soldiers. If I was one of these Japanese soldiers and I just saw this dude, like, I see this man firing at me by himself, I would have just been like, you know what, let's sleep on it. We'll come again tomorrow. He's not in a good mood. We'll just try again later. But they just keep coming. And finally, when the rest of the camp finally get to his position, there are 87 dead Japanese soldiers in front of this trench, with 31 of them lying directly in front of Garum. So by himself, he has killed like 87 or so of these 200 soldiers, and most of them are within a few feet of him. Like, some of these, with this one hand, he was firing point blank into them. It's incredible. It's ridiculous. The other Gurkhas were so inspired by what he did that for the next 3 days and 2 nights, while heavily outnumbered, they held the Japanese off until other allies could get to their position. And for his actions, he was given the Victorian Cross, which is, I've mentioned it a couple times in this episode. I think I even mentioned it some in the Military Animals episode 2 episodes ago. But it's the equivalent, it's the British equivalent to the Medal of Honor. And he was given the Victorian Cross on December 19th, 1945. Now here's the kicker. Despite him losing his right eye and right hand completely, which doctors tried to save, but they couldn't, had to get the right arm amputated, and he had to get something done with his eye, but he lost all sight in it. He still served with the 8th Gurkhas until 1947. So for 2 more years after this, he was still fighting. And after World War II and after his unit was disbanded, he settled in Britain, and he would live there until his death of pneumonia on December 12th, 1945. Like, you have to imagine that death when he come to this man's door. Like, death knocked, and then he was just like, "Hey man, look, I hate to bother you, but you know, would you mind?" You know what I mean? Like, this dude was insane. So now, I'm going to present another example and further prove that the Gurkhas have been kicking ass for over 200 years. Now, at the beginning of the episode, I talked about how the British made a stand in 1814, and then we jumped to 1945, where, as I just said, Lakamangarung defied all odds by, you know, dare I say, single-handedly fighting off these Japanese soldiers. So now we're going to jump to September 17th, 2010. This was not that long ago. This just hit the 11th anniversary of this incident I'm about to talk about. So now I'm going to tell you the story of Diprasad Poon. Diprasad Poon was acting sergeant of the 1st Battalion Royal Gurkha Rifles while they were stationed at an outpost near Babaji in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. Now, I cannot figure out why. I don't know if it's because this was so recent or if I, you know, admittedly just didn't do enough research, but I could not find much information on this guy, like, prior to this event that I'm going to talk about or after. But basically, Diprasad Poon was on guard duty one night on the night of September 17th. He was, you know, enjoying the clear air of Afghanistan when supposedly a cow just mooed out of nowhere. And it was the middle of the night. It was 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And Diprasad Poon was by himself at this outpost. There were three other people. I believe that they were asleep in the outpost. But he was outside and he hears this cow moo. And he realizes what time of night it is. So he's sitting there thinking to himself. And he's like, that's a little out of place. Not going to lie there, chief. So he peeks over the wall. And when he peeks over the wall of the outpost, what he sees surprises him. It's a Taliban insurgent. And he's burying some kind of bomb outside the gates of the outpost that they're in. And he's just like, that shouldn't be there. And what he does is he grabs his radio. And he informs his command that his position is under fire, and then he opens an attack on these insurgents. And as soon as he started firing, the rest of these Taliban come out. So he is sitting on this roof by himself when 30-plus insurgents start surrounding this outpost. And in a later interview, I will link to this interview so you can hear it too, because it's kind of cool listening to him. In a later interview, as soon as he realized the severity of the situation, he said, quote, I had so many of them around me that I thought I was definitely going to die. So I thought I'd kill as many of them as I could before they killed me, end quote. That is the thought of a true soldier. Like, he was under the assumption that he knew he was outnumbered. So he was under the assumption that he was going to die. So instead of just rolling over and making it easy for him, just like Groom did 55 years prior, he was like, I'm going to make them work for it. I am not going to go easy into the night. And this is a running theme with the Gurkhas, that they just simply don't have time for death. Like, this is another case of the Gurkhas who stared death in the face and said, no thanks, I'm good. What's cool is actually Diprasad Poon, his grandfather, he comes from a long line of Gurkhas. His grandfather served in World War II also, and while in service in 1944, he also received the Victoria Cross. So this is, not only are Gurkhas badass, but the Poon family is also, like, full of badassery. Anyways, back to the story. I'm getting off topic. Sorry, this story has excited me. So within a very short time of these insurgents attacking Diprasad Poon's outpost, he shot through over 300 machine gun rounds before grabbing his service rifle and going through another 200 or so rounds. And now, when he first went through all the rounds of the machine gun, the 300 or so rounds, he was on a roof. Now, keep this in mind. He's on this roof, or he's in this little guard tower, if I remember correctly. He is running back and forth like a madman, shooting out of all sides of this, and he's just dropping bodies left and right. And when he goes through all this machine gun ammo, he crawls over to an ammo crate and pops it open. And then he starts pulling grenades out. And at like two grenades at a time, he is chucking them off this roof like he's giving out beads at Mardi Gras. And it's just, he's going to fight. And he continues to fight. And then there was this one Taliban who, just like the Japanese soldiers seeing what Garung was doing, these Taliban are seeing this one guy do all this. They're hearing him yell. He's probably yelling all kinds of trash talk to them. He's standing up there holding a machine gun, going to town on them like he's Rambo or somebody. And you'd think they'd run away, you know? But I don't know. The Taliban is a different fighting force. I heard a quote one time, like in a mildly serious matter, kind of going off topic. I heard a quote one time. I cannot remember the quote. I cannot remember who said it. But he was, in regards to talking about fighting the Taliban, he said, quote, something like, how do you fight an enemy who looks down the barrel of the gun and sees paradise? And that's true for the Taliban. Like, they've already made their peace with God, and they are willing to fight to the death for what they believe in. But there's this one brave Taliban soldier, and I say brave, not in terms of I'm commending him, but simply because seeing what Diprasad Pune is doing, he still tries to try what he does. He climbs up on this guard tower, and Diprasad Pune takes his service rifle and points it at him, but it clicks. It's like a scene out of a movie. He ran out of ammo and didn't realize it. So what he does is takes the tripod from the machine guns that he'd been firing, and he beats this guy with it, and like knocks him off the roof and kills him. So at the end of this engagement, after only about 20 minutes, keep in mind, everything I'm about to tell you happened in 20 minutes. He fired over 400 rounds of ammo. He threw 17 grenades. He killed two insurgents with a claymore. And then he killed the one guy with a tripod. This happened in 20 minutes. He was going absolutely ham. And when all the dust was cleared and reinforcements finally got there, there were over 30 dead Taliban laying around this outpost. Like it's kind of the same. It's like I said, they're so similar, like the stories. They both were against odds. They both were by themselves, and they both just cleared the range. You know what I mean? You know, for his actions, he was awarded the Conspicuous Gallantry Cross by Queen Elizabeth II at Buckingham Palace. And the citation cites that his actions in that outpost that night were among, quote, the bravest from any Gurkha during two tours in Afghanistan, end quote. Where this happened in 2010, he is actually still alive, and he's living somewhere in Britain today. Man, if you're listening, I hope I did your story well, and you rock, man. I know it's a shot, like a snowball's chance in hell that he's listening, but you never know, you know? What gets me about this story is it's the middle of the night, and this is for both stories. This goes for what Lakhaman Garung and Diprasad Pune did. Neither of them fully knew how many they were up against. It is pitch black dark. In Garung's case, it's the middle of the Burma jungle. In Pune's case, it's the middle of the Afghanistan desert. So I can't imagine that there's much natural light. They don't know how many soldiers that they're up against. All they know is them and their men are under attack, and by God, if it's going to be by themselves, they are going to make them fight for it. And that's exactly what both these men did. But that's all I have for this episode. I know I got a little excited there, but these two men, they're incredible. Their stories are incredible, and I don't know, I get hype at stories like this. When I first started this podcast, Diprasad Pune is actually the reason I wanted to start this podcast, but his story was so short that I wanted to wait until I had somebody else to cite it with, and I'm just excited, or just happy that it happened to be another Gurkha, because I got to do an episode on the Gurkhas, who are some of my favorite soldiers in world history. If you guys have suggestions, if you would just like to send me email saying that you think I'm doing a good job, if you think I'm doing a bad job, if you just want to throw out a hi, you can email me at above.beyondpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/aboveandbeyondpodcast. You can also find me on YouTube. I'm on Spotify, Anchor. Find me wherever you can. Like, subscribe, rate, and review the show. Tell your friends about it. It helps out a lot. And thank you for listening, and I will see you next week on Above and Beyond.